Welcome to episode number 59 of the Speaking Podcast. And today I have a guest from Pakistan, Zane. But before I do that, I just want to tell those that are on YouTube, because we're actually, for the podcast listeners, we actually have the last few on YouTube. So you'll find all the episodes on the YouTube channel called Speaking Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast. Zane, welcome.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you for having me here.
Yeah, we've actually been trying it, I think, for about a year, because we just kept missing each other. We were trying to do it when I was in Wrocław and you were organizing the event. I was actually in the competition, so we just didn't get a chance. So cool. How I start off the podcast is, who's Zane?
So a short background of myself then. I'm from Pakistan. I grew up there, lived there for 24 years, moved to Poland in 2013. Lived there for 6.5 years in Wrocław, beautiful city, and now moved to Dublin, Ireland 1 year ago. The reason I moved is because of my wife, who at that point was my girlfriend, and she got here a job, so I followed her here. It's been good ride. So I've been a member of Toastmasters. That's where my public speaking career started. That was about 4 years ago. Since then, I have done in terms of public speaking, I have done trainings, mostly at my work, sometime outside work as well. And I've been speaking on and off, I wouldn't say at a professional level, more of like a want to be a professional level. So I've been involved in many storytelling events, stand-up comedy and all that kind of stuff. And I have organized myself many such events as well. And have been taking part in contests, of course, in Toastmasters as well.
Very interesting, because I have tried the open mic comedy. So how many of them have you done?
Not too many. You know some of those same folks that in Wrocław that come to Wooch as well, and they do the stand-up comedy stuff. So I've been going to them for a while. I've taken part in open mic, I think, 3 times. Okay. And every time it got better and better. But yeah, comedy is not my natural style, let's say. So it's not something I really have to push myself to do it. But I have taken part in a different event they organized in Wrocław. It was called Pulp Fiction. And it was more of a comedic storytelling. So you were actually telling stories and you had 10 to 15 minutes to tell a personal story, which was also funny. So that I have done actually a few times with them, and that was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. But that's more of my style, you know, like talking a bit more, not intentionally trying to be joke after joke after joke, which is what we do normally in stand-up comedy.
Well, I did it, and I plan to do more, is just to push yourself, because you're at an audience that, cool, like Toastmasters, they'll all clap, they'll all, no matter how good or bad you are, but in a, you know, open mic comedy session, like, you know, they'll just be silent or they'll start talking, drinking if you're not funny.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a much tougher audience, but at the same time, they are more willing to laugh as well. That's what I noticed, because they came to laugh, right? If a joke is funny, you have a lot of fun there. But yeah, you do have to work. So every time I did it, I got better, and I realized preparation is key. So I remember the third time I did it, I actually prepared whatever 5 minutes I had, and that went well, really well, because I knew what I'm saying, and I knew what words I want to say and what order and so on. The first 2 times, it was more ad hoc, you know, like not a very well-scripted stuff. And that's what the guys keep saying, Jim Williams and you know, Derek, and I've been talking to them. And what they do is they keep practicing their jokes again and again until they get it just right. And then it always works. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's the key.
Okay, perfect. And prior to your Toastmasters, when did you start? Were you shy younger, or how was your journey for speaking?
I was very, very shy. So I've spoken about that in my speeches as well. So I was a very shy kid from the very beginning. And there is one incident that I remember. I always wanted to speak, but I just didn't have the confidence. So I remember when I was maybe second or third grade, so I was very, very young at school, and there was a speech competition. And I signed up. I put my name in there and I asked my father, and he wrote me a good speech as well, because I was too young to write it myself. But I remember the teacher came to the classroom and she said, you know, whoever is going to speak at this event, come with me, because we are going to go ahead and prepare it. And I saw other people just got up and they left with her, but I somehow didn't move. So as a result, I didn't speak at that event. And then I never spoke at any event. So I never did any kind of public speaking. So the first time I really had to do was more or less in university when you have some, we had a communication kind of course, and I had to speak for 3 minutes, and I couldn't sleep the night before, even though it was just 3 minutes of my own topic, and I couldn't sleep the night before. It was really, really crazy. So, but over the years, as I grew up, I got a bit more confident in general. So this started to become a bit easier, especially when I started working. Then I moved abroad to Poland. Things somehow started to feel a bit more natural. But I think the key difference happened when I joined Toastmasters. So I always knew I want to speak, but I never had an environment like Toastmasters where you have such support, kind of. It's a safe place to try new things. So I got there and I gave my icebreaker, and people said, oh, you're so good. So the more motivation I got to speak, and I spoke more and more and more. And I'm the kind of person who likes to, like, once I like something, I really do it a lot. So that's what Toastmasters and public speaking become, right? So I was doing it every week. I was going to every meeting. I was speaking all the time. And it's been 4 years and I'm still doing. And I'm a bit crazy. You can say a bit nerd in that respect. I keep record of when I joined Toastmasters and how many speeches I have given. And I think about 2-3 weeks ago, I crossed the 200 mark.
Wow.
So now it's 215 or something like that at this point, because of the contest recently. I've been speaking a lot. So that's a lot of speeches. That's on average one speech every week, more or less. So that's what I've been trying to do. And I love it.
Brilliant. Brilliant. And like just that you mentioned the competition there, because I know I've seen recently that you've done very well in the Irish UK area.
Yeah. Yeah, so now I moved here, and Toastmasters has this organizational structure, and they're called district, and they organize the contest. So now I'm in Ireland, and the one that is here is basically all of Ireland and majority of UK. So it's anywhere above London, basically. So London below, south of UK, is a different district, and anything above that includes north of England, Scotland, and Wales. So this is our district. So it's a huge district. There are like 200 plus clubs here, so you can imagine a lot of people. So I took part in that, and it's my first time living in a where the native language is English. Like before in Poland, I had kind of advantage, because we in Pakistan, we study English from when we're in first grade. So I know English. I know that I have an accent and I have some pronunciation issues, but I never really had an issue in speaking in English. But And I always had that advantage while it's in Poland, because, you know, not a lot of people are comfortable or good at English when you're competing in contests, only at higher level. But here, even at club level, you know, you have these brilliant speakers who don't have to struggle with language at all. So it all comes down to the speaking skill and speech writing skills and so on. So I really had to work harder, much harder than I ever had to do in terms of writing good speeches and really performing them well. And I think it went quite well. So I took part in humorous contest last year, where I reached the third level, which is division. And in that case, it's Central Dublin here, where I came third. So I didn't go further. But this time in the springtime, they have this evaluation contest and international speech. And in both of them, I reached the district level, which is the UK and Ireland level. So I was in the top 12 in both of them. Didn't go to the final part, but next year.
No, that's a fantastic achievement, you know, considering how many clubs, and as you said, you know, with all the speakers, brilliant. So saying that, and I mean, like, you know, you've done very well in Poland as well. How do you prepare your speeches?
I guess it depends a bit. So, you know, a lot of people join Toastmasters because they lack confidence, and that was the case for me in the beginning as well. So how I used to prepare speech was I would write it, and then I would rehearse like crazy for a few days, and then I would go and deliver it because I really wanted it to be perfect. But once I got over my fear of public speaking, I realized that actually in my professional life, I'm a product manager, so I do have to speak from time to time at work, all the time actually. But it's never planned. So it's not like I get a notice and I know that in 1 week from now, I have to speak for 10 minutes and this is the topic and I have to just, you know, prepare for that. It's almost never like that. It's always that I come in the morning and I get in news that in a couple of hours, I have to present my product to this group because they're interested and they have time or whatever. So it's a very short amount of time. So at some point I decided the approach I was using before of you know, writing a script and then rehearsing and really preparing is not what I really need at work. So I changed my strategy and I started to focus how quickly I can prepare something. Because what happens is with Toastmasters, what I have noticed is they get into, like, everything has to be perfect. You know, your vocal variety has to be perfect. Your body language has to be perfect. Your, you know, opening, concluding structure, all of that. They focus a lot on technicalities, which is good, to know. But you don't always have to be perfect. In real life, all that matters is that your audience actually gets what you want to say and you achieve your goal from that perspective. So that's how I do now. Whenever I have to speak, be it in Toastmasters or outside Toastmasters, I first look at what do I want to say to the audience? What is my key message? What do I want them to remember once they leave, you know, or do what I, once I'm done. So that's where I start. And then I have my own method of that, just, you know, which is very simple. You know, find three key points that you're going to convince them with to your point of view. Use stories if possible, use whatever facts and statistics I know about, because I have realized also that nobody asks you to speak about a topic that you don't really know. So if they're asking you to speak, you probably know your topic. So content is usually not the issue. It's the organization of it in a quick way, which makes your point across in a meaningful way to your audience. That's the key point that we have to learn. So that's what I've been trying to practice. So nowadays I don't spend too much time preparing my speeches. Except, of course, the contest, because contests are different, where everything is judged to, you know, minute level and they look at every small thing. There I do have a script and I go through it 100 times and I make it as much perfect as possible, both in writing and in performing.
Very, very interesting. So I know that you have actually opened a few clubs as well in Poland. Yeah, you were an instrumental in a few clubs going. So you might tell us, because, you know, not everybody's listeners are Toastmasters, but there is a lot that are. So you might tell them how you went about it, what advice you could give to people on forming a club.
Yeah. So I think there are a few things. I became an area director 1 year ago. So I was area director from 2018 to 2019 in Poland for my city in Wrocław, where we had six clubs at that point when I became. So as I said, like, sometimes I get obsessive about whatever I like doing. So I became a bit obsessive about Toastmaster. But the reason I became, because I got so much value out of it. So I decided, you know, if it can impact so much my life, it can impact many other people's life. And the way to do that is to have more members in our current clubs and to open new clubs. So I saw a huge opportunity that we can do that in Wrocław. So when I became a director, I remember the first time we did the club officer training, which is one of the responsibilities of area director. At the end of it, I shared what I want to achieve by the end of the year with all the officers that were present. And one of the things was that we have six clubs, and by the next year, I want 12 clubs. And now I would be looking to you for help. So they were shocked. I was also not 100% sure that I can get anywhere close to that. I had some ideas, but I needed a lot of help, because not one person cannot start a club. You need few people and you need a commitment. You have done it yourself. You know, like, it's for one person, it's almost an impossible job. So that's how I started. I was very vocal that I want to start club. And then once I did that, some people who, like, for example, one girl who used to be a member of our club, and she is from Ukraine originally. And now there is a huge Ukrainian community living in Poland. So what she thought was, maybe there is a room for Ukrainian speaking Toastmaster clubs in Wrocław. So she came up with this idea and she came to me and she said, "Oh, I heard that you want to start a club. I have this idea. Maybe you can support me." So I said, "Why not?" So she did most of the organization. What I did was, help her with the tips and techniques that we learned, you know, like how to conduct a good meeting in order to attract more guests, or how to do marketing and all of that stuff, where I could pitch in or I could find people that could help her. But she and her team did most of the work, and it took 4 or 5 months for them, but they managed to charter a pure Ukrainian speaking club in Poland, which is, I think, the first lead ever outside of Ukraine. So that's how other clubs went as well. I started one in my own company. A couple of other clubs were started by other members who, one club was basically a split of our club. My home club, Wrocław Speakers, got so big that we decided to spawn a new club out of that. So, but this was also done by a few different people. All I did was to support them. So in the end, I didn't get to 12, but I did get to 10. So we opened four clubs in 1 year in Toronto. So it became like almost double the size that it originally was. And that was huge, a lot of fun, a lot of work as well, but very fulfilling because in all of those clubs are still there. Some of them are doing really well. Some of them are a bit struggling, especially nowadays with all the online meetings. But I see like so many people got value out of it. So when I moved to Dublin, because of course the Toastmaster has been for much, much longer in UK and Ireland. So as a result, there are many clubs. Dublin is full of clubs. So I visited a lot of clubs and I was talking with the district officers here and they needed somebody, they called it club extension chair, somebody with experience of starting club that could help anybody who wants to start. So in the last 1 year, I have helped, I think, four or five clubs in Dublin, not as much as I did in Wrocław, but more in a guidance and mentoring role to few clubs to start. So most of them are corporate because there are so many community clubs here, there's not much room, but there's a lot of room for companies who want to start a Toastmaster club. So that's where I've been supporting in Dublin as well. So overall, I think it's 8-9 clubs and it's not that hard once you figure out the, I think there are two things when you're starting a club. One, what makes you unique compared to other Toastmaster clubs, especially if you are making it in a place where there are already clubs, right? And the second thing is you need a good team because no one person will never be able to start or maintain a club. So you need at least four or five people, a couple of them really dedicated and the other one willing to do the work. And then it just takes you a couple of months to start a club because the rest is just techniques that you can borrow from other people and just do it.
What I did is I got a few people from different clubs because we'd done a morning club, a business club. So that was different from other stuff. But what I done is I reached out to people that were in the clubs, the two clubs, three clubs, and faded out. And I said, look, this is what I'm going to do. And I kind of resurrected a few of them. And you know, we've got a very good retention rate and you can create a fantastic atmosphere.
Exactly. And you're right. Like one of the key things I find when people are starting to or anything they want to do, they don't communicate it to others because maybe others are not willing to act by themselves. But once they see somebody else who is passionate and wants to do things, they actually want to help. That's what I noticed when I was area director. They were the same people that were in the previous year and they're the same that are now. But what I did was I openly said, I want to do this. Who is with me? And then a few of them were ready to help and they helped. And in 1 year, we did a lot of stuff. But once, if I hadn't explained and I just kept my idea to myself, I don't think we would have gone anywhere close to four new clubs.
No, exactly. And like, because I know you did like a webinar or something on this. Do you have any documentation or any kind of checklist or something that you've created to for somebody that aspires to open a club?
What I did was I did a webinar about 6 months ago and that was for District 71, but it's recorded and it's on YouTube. I can send you the link. Mm-hmm. So I share, if I'm not wrong, there are 5 points that I share that you should keep in mind whenever you're starting a club. So a couple of them are, as I said, the unique selling point. You really have to be super clear what makes you different than other clubs. Because if it's like, I'm starting a community club in Dublin, and when there are 10 others, which are very good club, why should somebody come to my club, which is rather new and probably not likely to have a lot of experienced members, than compared to a club which is 60 years old here, which has 50 members and a lot of amazing speakers. So I really have to find a unique selling point. Otherwise, there is no point. And the second thing is the team. You have to have a team. Location is important. Like I feel like Toastmasters, I mean, nowadays it's all online, but when you're starting a in-person club, yes, location becomes important. You cannot just do it in a bar or you can if that's what you really, that kind of team you want. But I feel like Toastmaster has this, I wouldn't say formality, but a bit of professionalism. Like you have to have good meetings and you want to have a structure and a bit of a sense of, you know, like doing something productive rather than just having fun. Fun is also important, but not only. So that's why location becomes important. And it needs to be central, so it's easy to reach and parking and all of that stuff. Don't remember the fourth point, but the final point was you have to build a community. Because club, at the end of the day, is a community. It's people who spend their time, their effort, and they need to like each other. And they need to become friends with each other. And that's the way you build a good culture. And the first 6 months are really important, because if in those 6 months, half your members lose interest, it becomes very hard to recover from that. But if in those 6 months you can build an exciting, fun, but at the same time productive culture, it's just growth after that, because there is no way to stop because it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, like you have 20 good people and they're all having fun and they're learning, and suddenly they bring their friends and they join. It becomes 30 and then 40, and it just keeps growing. Yeah. So that's the way to do it.
No.
Now you have to plan. Yeah, planning is very important. I think the other point that I forgot to mention, now I remember, is the planning. Because if you don't plan and you just, I will start a club and okay, 1 week from now I'm going to have a kickoff meeting, or it's not going to work. You need team and you need to plan. What do I want to achieve out of that? Who will do what? When they will do it? And all of that thing. So if you do proper planning for 3-4 weeks, you can start a club in 2 weeks. But if you don't do that planning, you can try to start a club for 6 months and it wouldn't happen.
That's
the biggest mistake people make. They just go ahead and start meeting, and then they never finish the charter. And some clubs are just waiting for 2 years. Just insane. I don't think it's possible. Either you start a club in maximum 2 months or you don't start a club.
Yeah. No, I think you have to do it fast. And what you mentioned is the location, because we got a beautiful location in the city center.
Yeah.
15th floor, and it definitely makes a huge difference. You know, people are impressed, and you know, mm-hmm. It's professional. We keep it very funny and friendly at the same time, mm-hmm. but we're there to improve our speaking, and we've got, you know, high caliber people. And if it is a new club, I think an advantage as well is bringing in, you know, 3 to 6 people that are experienced, because mm-hmm. they will actually help raise up.
True, definitely. If you have few experienced people who are, even if they're not able to come every week, just because they are there and their presence is there, whenever they come, they add a lot of value. And they definitely involve as many. And this is another thing I think you would have noticed. You have been in Toastmasters for a while. I have been here. And after you spend like 3-4 years in Toastmasters, you basically get what you wanted originally, be it gaining confidence or learning communication skills or even leadership. After 3-4 years, the only people actually stay are either because of emotional sense, because they just don't want to leave a community, or they find something more interesting, like being a district leader and just going that route, or they go for contest. So for me, one of the biggest motivation these days is contest. Mm. So, but I think there is another way to motivate those members. And that's the way you said, like when you're starting a new club, you invite those experienced members who are just, they're losing interest at this point because they don't feel they're adding any value or learning anything new. And you bring them to this new group of people that they can actually help. So they're learning in the process themselves on how to help others. That's how you can keep interested those experienced Toastmasters for a long term as well, and gain from their experience and transfer that knowledge to new members. And the mm-hmm. cycle just keeps continuing.
And have you been a mentor to many people?
I've been mentored to a couple of people in my clubs that I've been a member of. But I mentored clubs. Actually, so I've been mentoring the club officers and taking them through the first few months that I started in Grotthorp especially, and now here in Dublin as well. Just guiding them, coming to their meeting and seeing what they're doing right and how it can be done better. In terms of public speaking, I've been mentor and mentee at the same time. So in contests, I have a couple of friends in Grotthorp still. One of them is Cyril, who just won a couple of days ago everything.
So, I think we need to tell people about that, because he came second in the humorous speech, because I was in the humorous speech last year and you were hosting it. And I mean, he was impressive. And he's won the Polish competition?
So he won the Polish championship, and he doesn't speak Polish, by the way. He just wrote a speech, got somebody helped him to translate it into Polish so that it flows. And then he learned it by heart. And it's a humorous speech. So it's harder to be funny in a foreign language. And he went with that to Białystok in February, where they had the finals of the Polish championship. And he won there. So that was a huge, huge thing. I mean, really inspiring. I have done speeches like that, but only at a club level where I can read from a paper, never actually learning by heart and performing in the contest at such a high level. So that was one thing. But then a couple of days ago on this weekend, there was the district conference, and he was finalist in all the four contests this time, in table topic, in humorous, in evaluation, and in international speech. And he won three of them, and he came second in the evaluation contest. So it's like unbelievable.
Has anybody ever done something similar?
I don't think ever. I mean, I know people who have won all contests, but not in the same year. They have tried for a few years, and over the years, they have managed to win all of them.
And one competition.
Yes. Yeah. In 1 year, he has won everything. And that just goes on to show how much he values, you know, like I know him personally. He was a member of, we used to be in the same club. And I remember when he joined. So first of all, he's really passionate about it. Second, he has a lot of knowledge. But I think the key thing here is that he's really hardworking. He knows he wants to win this. He knows he wants to become a world champion. He has high goals and high aspirations, and he actually works hard and make it happen. He was really disappointed last year when he came second in humorous and third in international speech. And this year he left no stone unturned to make sure that he comes first. So that's the inspiration, you know, like looking at him and learning from him, helping him wherever I can, has inspired me to work that hard in my contest. I think that was a huge influence on myself to try my best here in Dublin. Even though I know that the contest is much more stronger here, even at the lower levels rather than at the district. But I think he was a great inspiration and great help as well. Like that's where the mentor-mentee thing comes in. Mm-hmm. I sent to him my speeches. He helped me with those. He sent me the videos and I helped him. And then we have a third friend, Naveen. He's in Wrocław. And he also took part. He just has the unfortunate luck of being in Wrocław and in the same division as Cyril. So he never reached the district because he eventually got lost. He came third in all these contests that Cyril now won at division level. So he's a great guy, very talented, and he has helped me a lot in my speeches. Like we used to have daily calls when we were having the contest, so I would help him and he would help me. And that's a great way to do it because what I noticed for myself, when I write a speech, I'm too close to it, especially like a contest speech where you usually tell stories. So those are your personal stories and you want to tell everything from your, you know, like as it happened. But sometimes those details are not needed. Sometimes there are logical gaps because you just assume that the audience would know something when there is nowhere it's mentioned there. And if somebody else can have a look at it, they can give you really amazing tips. And that's where these guys come in. And I try to do the same for them. And they did the same for my speeches. Because otherwise, I think you cannot win a speech contest by yourself. It's impossible. You need a bunch of people to look at your speech and to help you with both the writing of it and the performance of it to make sure that you do your best, because it takes a tribe to win, let's say that.
No, exactly. Like when I was in the competition the last time, and kind of shame on me, I practiced it twice beforehand, and you know, but I can see people have every single movement, every single, yeah, everything to a T. You can see it's been rehearsed 100 mm-hmm. plus times. You know, they just have,
yeah, some, exactly.
And, you know, it's kind of not how I do it, but I can see that if you want to win, you need to go to that level, you know.
Definitely. And I'm with you, because for a normal speech, I would never do this. As I said, my philosophy here is that in a normal everyday work, at least in my work, whenever I have to speak, there is just never time to prepare like that. So I have to find other ways to prepare as best as I can in the short amount of time. That's what I try to practice. And that's my goal, to still keep getting better at that. But in contest, I realized that this approach cannot work. And once I came here, because when you're area director, you cannot compete. So I had 1 year gap. But once I came to Dublin, I was again allowed to compete again in Toastmasters. So I tried that approach where I actually worked really, really hard. And my wife was surprised now, because in the past you used to say that, yeah, you want to win, but you never work hard. But now this time when I was competing, this time you actually worked, and I could see, because you spent hours, you know, talking and looking at your script and practicing and rehearsing. And that paid off, because I don't think it was very hard for me to imagine that I would reach this high district level in the speech and evaluation at the same time. But I think now I believe more in myself. So I think I can do even better next year.
Brilliant. Oh, excellent. Excellent. No, listen, it's been fantastic. Some brilliant advice. Be sure to send me the link for the thing, because then I can put that in the description and put on the YouTube and on the podcast, so people will be able to. Mm-hmm. How can people contact you?
The best is email. So I can send you the email. You can put there in the description as well. So that's the best way to contact me. Otherwise, you can also find me on LinkedIn. That's another way to find the same name. So just contact me there. That's okay. The best way.
Yeah, so we're connected on LinkedIn. So I'll make sure I put the description on.
Yeah.
So listen, it's been fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, Roy.
So I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Zane as much as I did. You can find all our episodes on speakingpodcast.com. And we also have two other podcasts, Learn Polish Podcast and the Meditation Podcast. And they can be found at loicallen.com. Until next week, take care.